Hi, I'm Rod Kleef. Each and every week, I record an interview with a thought leader that I know you're going to get a ton of value from. Now, here on YouTube are the video versions of my podcast, Lifetime Cashflow Through Real Estate Investing. Now, to make sure you get the latest information, please subscribe and hit the notification bell. Let's get started. Welcome to another edition of How to Build Lifetime Cashflow Through Real Estate Investing. I'm Rod Kleef, and I'm absolutely thrilled you're here. And you are really going to enjoy the guest that we have on the show today. His name's Neil Bawa, and maybe you've already heard him on one of the other podcasts because he gets around a lot. But Neil's invested in over 1,500 units or beds because he's also in student housing. He's an educator. He raises a significant amount of equity every year. He's a tech, self-proclaimed tech geek. And just a really brilliant guy. So we're really blessed to have you today, Neil. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks so much, Rod. I'm delighted to be here. I've been trying to get on your show for a while. Thanks for having me.
All you had to do is ask, my friend. It's funny. I was telling you before we started recording that, you know, so many of people have said, have told me, you got to get Neil on the show. You got to get Neil on the show. And I don't even remember who they were now, but I've heard your name come up so many times. It's kind of a no-brainer. So I'm really glad you're here. And we're going to drill down on some topics today that we don't normally kind of broach. But before we do, give my listeners just a little bit of a background on who you are and where you came from, if you would.
Sure, Rod. I am not real estate royalty. You know, I haven't done 100 loans or flipped 1,000 homes. I am a technologist, and I've had a full and complete tech career and a successful tech exit. And I actually used the money that I made from that technology exit, and I invested it into single family. I bought 10 homes in California. Then I bought 10 triplexes in Chicago. And I realized, and you talk about this a lot, is that stuff is non-scalable, right? I realized it wouldn't scale. And couldn't get enough loans and was going crazy managing. And so I started to invest in passive syndications with people like you. And when I started doing that, I realized, oh, this is substantially better. This scales a lot better and the quality of management is a lot better. And so I started getting curious about it. And this is back when I'm still in my tech company. You know, I'm managing 400 employees. And I'm just getting curious about what is this syndication stuff? And I'm learning more and more about it. And eventually I said, I'm learning so much good stuff that if I don't teach this to somebody, I'm going to forget it. So I opened my own meetup group and I started teaching this stuff. And people really liked it because they knew that I was a technologist. I had nothing to sell. I had no active projects or anything like that. I was just there every month saying, this is all the cool stuff I'm learning from all these podcasts and this other stuff. And here's how I'm implementing it in my small portfolio of 35 units. And people really loved it. They kind of lapped it up. And then I started using virtual assistants, 1, 2, 5, 6 virtual assistants. And I started telling people how to hire and manage and structure virtual assistants for growing income levels. And so people liked it. So eventually when I sold my company in 2013, then slowly I transitioned full-time into multifamily, became a syndicator, started off with 3 investors in my first project. And now I have about 300 investors. So the portfolio has grown to 150 million and we are now growing it aggressively.
Look at you. Beautiful, beautiful. And you know what's beautiful about it is that it came about as a result of you adding value to other people. You know, and it's just funny how the universe works, and the same thing has happened in my life, you know, with this podcast and now my coaching business and all that. Those that add the most value reap the most rewards. And I think that's just, doesn't matter what industry business interest you have, that mindset is really the mindset to have. I love it. Well, you know, before we started recording, I asked you what some topics would be that you enjoy talking about. So, you know, I believe in playing to people's strengths, and you brought up a couple. So let's get into those. Let's drill down immediately so we can add as much value today as we can. And so I know that you enjoy speaking about market selection, city selection, even drill down to the actual neighborhood selection. So let's get into that right out of the gate, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. So I call these real focuses when I'm teaching my meetups. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you a list of real focuses, and then I'm going to give you a bunch of ranges, right? Because you've heard all of these real focuses before, but what you haven't heard is the ranges. I'm a data scientist, so yeah. I've done what is known as back testing. So you basically say, is this the right range? And then you go test it on 100 cities. Then you say, is that the right range? And then you go test that on 100 cities. So these are back tested over thousands of experiments that I've done over the last 5 years. So my first real focus when I'm investing in a city is population growth, okay? And I want roughly, and I use a site called city-data.com to look at this. You can also use Google for population. Mm-hmm. And what I want to see is that since 2000, has this city gone up at least 20% in population? I want there to be a 20% increase in population in the city. Now, if the city is as large as Los Angeles, I cut that to 10%. So New York, okay. Los Angeles, Chicago, 10%. Big cities don't grow as much, but 20%. Good examples of cities that are like that? Phoenix, Orlando, Las Vegas, Columbus, Ohio. That's actually one of the only Midwest or Rust Belt cities that matches that scenario. And then you have a bunch of cities that won't match that scenario. They're not bad cities to invest in, but in general, I'm trying to invest in the best cities, right? Mm-hmm. So number one is population growth, and you're looking for 20% since 2000. My number two real focus is that I want the income levels in those cities in the same time frame, and you can get that at city-data.com for any city. Just type in the name of the city.
And you'll another one is bestplaces.net. Even correct. census.gov will give you that information as well. So if you're taking notes, write those two down right. as well. Please continue. Exactly.
So I go there, I look at the income. Amount of income growth that I've seen, and I want a 30% growth in income since the year 2000.
Wow.
20% population, 30% income growth. What that really implies is that city is keeping up with inflation. Because if a city doesn't keep up with inflation, in the long run, you end up with high levels of delinquency in Class C properties. Very high.
Makes sense. So you came up with this by evaluating all these different cities just to come up with these key metrics that you like to target. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
I've done over 200 cities that match these numbers. The metric leads from the first two and three. So what was the first one? 20%. The second one was 30%. Guess what the third one is? It's 40%. Mm-hmm. I want to see 40% increase in the median house or condo value. So when you see a population growth, that tends to lead income growth because employers are fighting for employees. And that tends to lead to house growth. 20% growth in population will lead to 30% growth in income, which leads to 40% growth in household value, all since the year 2000. Those are my first three real focuses. And you'll find a whole bunch of cities in the US that qualify or just qualify. For example, Columbus, Ohio, one of my favorite examples, almost exactly qualifies for all three metros, almost exactly, all three numbers, almost exactly. My fourth real focus is crime. So on any city data page, you'll see a crime table. Go to the bottom of the crime table, the blue row, and on the left side, you'll see a number that is the old number. I think it's from 15, 16 years ago. And on the right side, you'll see the number for last year. You want the number for last year for any city in the US to be under 500. The crime number for any city should be under 500. And one other thing, you want the number on the left to be higher than the number on the right. What that means is crime was very high back then and has come down. So an example, you'll find that cities like Boise, Idaho are at 300, very, very low crime cities in the US. Eugene, Oregon, very low crime. And then you've got very high crime cities. What is the highest crime city in the US? It's not Detroit, it's St. Louis. New Orleans, very close, right? So okay. St. Louis, New Orleans, Detroit, very, very high crime. Memphis is way up there, 850 or 900. But what I'm looking for is the pattern. I like to invest in Orlando, and my people that listen to my podcast have said, but Orlando's at 550, Neil. And I say, yes, but look at where it was 15 years ago. It was at 900. Something is happening in this city where crime is reducing at a very accelerated rate. Usually it's education. Right? Most of the time, if education levels on the same city data page are going upwards, you'll see a reduction in crime at the same time. So those are my four real focuses. If you apply these four real focuses, the 20, 30, 40, 500, you're going to basically stay away from cities that are not going to appreciate well in bad times. Please note that in good times, every city appreciates. I keep hearing about Detroit doing well. Yeah, of course it's doing well. Every city in the US is doing well. And so Detroit's doing well as well. But have you seen the population loss? It went from 1.7 million to 600,000 people. And at no point over the last 58 years has it stopped declining in population.
That's a clue. That's, guys, that's what we call a clue. Okay. Yeah.
Right. And people are still looking to invest there. They don't realize that the cap rates that started off in 1959 at 5 cap are now up to 12 and going and rising. Right. And rising, right? So right. You may make money today in cash flow, but you still have to sell this property 5 or 10 years from now at a higher cap rate.
Yeah, there's no exit strategy, guys. And sure, you can buy D-class assets as well in other markets, but your only exit strategy is cash flow. There's, you know, if you're buying bottom of the barrel properties in declining areas, there's no exit. So, all right, that's very insightful. Love that framework and those metrics that gives clarity to a lot of people as to what to look for when they're doing that initial analysis to determine what markets to invest in. Love right. it.
But the key is the neighborhoods, because Rod, you know this and I know this. Really strong cities today, cities like Phoenix, are still going to have really awful areas, right? Mm-hmm. They have the areas too, and
sure.
So you've got to look at the neighborhood real focuses, and the first neighborhood real focus is, again, income. And how do you find the income for a neighborhood? Same page, city data, scroll to the map and mm-hmm. So let's say you're looking at Phoenix, you're gonna see the Phoenix map and you're gonna notice that it's broken up into tiny little blue pieces. Well, click on whatever piece. If you're looking in Scottsdale, well, go click on the Scottsdale piece and mm-hmm. you'll see neighborhoods in Scottsdale. Click on them and a box will open up. Inside that box, the first thing I want you to look at is the income level for that neighborhood. It has to be between 40 and 70,000. 40,000 lower, 70,000 upper bound. Why an upper bound? Because it's not gonna cash flow beyond 70,000. You're mm-hmm. gonna have trouble basically buying it and getting cash flow for your investors. If you're an appreciation guy, go above 70, go to 80, go to 90. But if you're actually looking to syndicate or you're looking to buy a property where you want 8-9% cash, then your 40 to 70 sweet spot is perfect. You can go a little bit lower than 40 in the Midwest, maybe 36, 37, but don't go below that. Because what
Tell me why.
I have found that the moment you drop below $40,000 household income, that number is very strongly tied to increase in delinquency. Yeah. By the time you get to cities that are at 32,000, your delinquency levels are 3 times higher. But what I found is between 40 and 50,000, there's only a slight decrease in delinquency. So obviously, as 10 people get richer, your delinquency levels decrease. But 40 seems to be that magic number right now in the US where you get reasonable delinquency and reasonable cap rates.
And then on the upper level, what happens if you go above the 70,000? Please clarify that.
I find that the numbers don't pencil out. So Basically, they're great properties. They're great properties in great areas, but I'm struggling to meet cash flow requirements, though they might do really well over 5 years. So if I was running a REIT, I'd go over 70. Because when I'm running a REIT, I make all the decisions. My investors don't make any decisions. And I think those are great properties that I'm buying. But what I'm finding is that when I'm significantly pushing over 70, I find it very difficult to get to average, you know, 7 or 8 cash. And so given that I'm a syndicator, that kind of knocks those properties out for me. They should knock it out for you if you're making all the decision and you're putting in all of your money.
Right. Sure. And if you've got no cost of funds like a REIT, really, effectively,
exactly.
some of these, you know, insurance companies, things of that nature. So that's the first one. All right, mm-hmm. Keep going.
The second one is on the same box, right below where the income is. You're going to see poverty level. Never ever invest in a neighborhood where poverty level is over 20%. That is the most important metric that I'm going to give you. You go over 20%, your churn levels, your constant churn where people are coming and leaving or you're forcing them out because they're being evicted, right? Your churn level will kill every single dollar of your profit. 20 is dangerous.
Ask me how I know. Ask me. Well,
yes, know. Please, Gerard. I want to know.
No. I'm becoming a little notorious for that statement because I've made every mistake that can be made. And what you just described was, you know, was my typical portfolio that I had in Denver, and I had then, and I was in Memphis, very ingrained in Memphis. I call that a seminar as well. But the thing that kills you the most in this business is the churn, the turnover, because that's the most expensive. You've got vacancy, you've got make ready costs. And that's what killed me here in 2008 when I lost $50 million was that churn. And so really grateful to hear that from someone else and acknowledge, you know, that dynamic and to alert you guys to beware of that. So poverty level definitely impacts that. No question. You buy in tough areas, you're going to have that turnover. Yep. You're going to have that delinquency. So please continue.
So I tend to, for my properties, I tend to be below 15%. So I'm a little more conservative. I tend to be, so if you're conservative, stay below 15%.
Okay.
The next metric, which is right next to the poverty metric, is the unemployment rate for that neighborhood. Okay. Not for the city. This one's a slightly more complicated. So it's two-step. So you open a new tab in your browser and you Google the unemployment rate for your city. So let's say you're looking at Phoenix, so you Google unemployment rate Phoenix, and Google will give you a beautiful chart. Right now, I think Phoenix is around 3.5%, right? So write that down. Now go back to that neighborhood that you clicked on and make sure its unemployment rate is not more than 2% higher than the city's. So if the city's at 3.5, you can be at 5.5. If the city's at 6, you can be at 8. But if the city's at 5 and this is at 12, the moment a recession hits, this area's unemployment rate is going to skyrocket and go above 20. And now you end up with massive poverty problems and delinquency problems and nobody paying rent. So it is okay because you're typically buying in cash flow classy areas to be a little bit above the city's level, because obviously class A areas in the city might be at 1% unemployment, right? We're not comparing with those. So be 2% above. At the most, be 3. Some metros like Memphis or St. Louis, you can be 3% above. But more than that, what you're saying is, I know I'm buying in the area that has unemployment trouble. And for the moment, because the economy is good, this is great. But you know that you don't buy for good times, you buy for bad times.
So let me stop you there. Guys, I just want to hammer that one home, okay? Because Robert and I were just talking about this the other day. We watch other people's offering memorandum and presentations on syndications that they're doing, and we were just watching one the other day. And Robert asked, you know, how'd you stress test this deal? And they said we didn't. Okay. So it's going to be perfect forever. There's not going to be any speed bumps in the road. So guys, just so you know what stress testing means is you look at what happens, what ifs. You do what ifs. What happens if the vacancy drops 15%? What happens if your rents pull back? You know, you're realistic about a deal. And so I just want to hammer that point home. Thank you. So please continue.
So those three are kind of my real focuses for neighborhoods. I have a fourth one, which is subjective. Everything I gave you so far is a number, right? Mm-hmm. The fourth one is this, and please understand that this is not a racial comment, it's a demographic comment. I'm a demographer.
Okay.
When in the same box, you're gonna see a pie graph, and that pie graph is going to show you the ethnic or racial mix of the people living there.
Okay.
For best properties, make sure that there are two slices or more. Okay. You never want to go into an area where all of your tenants are going to be, let's say, white or Chinese or Mexican or African American, because now what you're doing is you're reducing your marketing efficiency tremendously, because you can only target one audience. So when you see that pie graph, I want to see a pizza slice that's about 25%. Right? And obviously there's going to be one big pizza slice. So it could be, right, you know, whites are 70% and African Americans are 25%. That's a great market to go in. What you don't want to go into a market, if, for example, where one pizza slice is 95%, you will have huge amounts of trouble marketing your property, especially in bad times.
Well, I tightened up when you started that conversation, but I felt better. I felt better after you said it. And that's very astute and very accurate. And it doesn't matter what demographic you're talking about, you're going to have that issue if it's the entire pie. So Well said. Now let's talk. Let's shift gears because that's the neighborhood, correct? That's the neighborhood.
That's the neighborhood. Four statistics for neighborhoods.
Yeah, love it. Incredible value you added, Neil. Incredible. You're living up to what people have told me about you. So the next thing I want to chat about, we chatted about this briefly, is when you buy an asset, you buy a property, and it's chugging along. You're having some challenges with it. I know that you've got a kind of a cool framework with its own acronym as to how you go about identifying where the issue is. And yes. I'd love for you to dig in on that. So please take it away.
Absolutely. Firstly, note that this is not something that we do for every one of our properties. If it's doing really well, leave your property manager alone. Do your weekly meetings, pat him on the back. But very often you'll have properties that are not doing well. You're targeting 95% occupancy, you're at 90. Or you are at 95% occupancy, but your economic vacancy is very high. Basically, a lot of these people are not paying, so you know you have to kick them out and get new guys in. Well, so now you need to figure out, you need to understand your property and you need to understand your tenant base and your marketing base. I do this through a 5-step process and I call it LASL. Mm-hmm. The first L stands for leads, the people that are interested in your property. The second one stands for appointments, the people that set appointments to come to your property. The third one is called shows, S, people that actually show up after setting an appointment. The fourth one are the people that are signing applications, that's A. And the last L is people that sign leases. L, leads, appointments, shows, applications and leases.
And guys, you should write this stuff down, because what he's going to explain here is so obvious. We had someone else do a presentation at my multifamily boardroom that spoke about something similar. This is so commonsensical, but so many operators lose sight of this. So pay attention very closely here. Keep going, my friend.
Sounds good. So now I always start with the leads. First, I want to see what the number of leads is for my property, right? And there's rules of thumbs. Basically, here's a rule of thumb, and obviously depending on the property, it'll vary. If you've got a property that's very tough to lease, then you need a lease every month, or you need one lead per unit per month. So if you've got 244 units, you want 244 leads every month. That's a rule of thumb. You might need less, you might need more, but that is a good rule of thumb to start. You want to count
how many. Just so that I heard you correctly, depending upon the size of your property, you're saying if it's a challenge to lease that property, you should have the same number of leads as the number of doors that you have.
Exactly, per month.
Okay, got it.
Per month, right? So now you've got this 260 unit property. Do you have 216 leads? And if you don't have 216 leads, then focus on that. What is your property manager doing? What are some of the things that you could do? There are so many things that you could do on your own. A property manager is simply going to say, I use AppFolio and I put these properties in AppFolio. And when I put them in AppFolio, I get leads and that's my system. Right. There are dozens of tenant marketing sites out there that are not reached by AppFolio. There are so many strategies that you can implement. I have full-time people, employees that I pay full-time, that just click on ads. They do nothing except click on ads. Why? Because every time you click on an ad that's your own, you refresh it. It goes to the top of the stack.
Wow.
Right? Full-time employees, I kid you not. That's how powerful this is. So you as a syndicator need to look at the leads and try to get them as close to that benchmark that I gave you as possible.
So let me ask you this. Where are they clicking on ads? Obviously you're not paying for those ads because you'd be paying for those clicks. So give me an example of where they might be clicking on an ad to refresh it.
So RentLinks, for example, is one of the big ones where we click on ads.
Okay.
Zillow Rental Manager. Let's go for Zumper Pro. Right? Some of these are paid, but compared to the marketing budget of your property, what you're paying is nothing. Really nothing. It's not going to move the needle.
Okay.
But it's going to move the needle on those leads. Now, here's what happens very often. You've got now 216 leads coming in. You did your magic. You worked very hard. And now when you're looking at the number of actual appointments, you're not seeing many appointments. Well, the reason for that is your manager, your property manager thinks that internet leads are, pardon my French, shit leads.
Right.
They call them shit leads, right? Mm-hmm. And so here's the truth. This is what it is. An internet lead is gold in the first 5 minutes, silver for the next 2 hours, and then shit after that.
Interesting. Interesting. So how do you maximize that? How do you maximize that timeliness?
Simply by doing this. Every property that we have, Rod, we ask for the login for the phone logs. You know, they've got an electronic phone system, right? Mm-hmm. That has a log somewhere. AT&T, Comcast, whoever's there, there's a log. We get our virtual assistants to pull that log. And we force, push, hard, nudge, whatever we have to do to get the property manager to understand this. An internet lead is no different from somebody walking into your leasing office. When someone walks into the leasing office and you're doing some paperwork, guess what you do? You put the pen down and you walk over and you greet them. Why would you treat an internet lead any different? He just walked in through your virtual door.
Love it.
Therefore, when that lead comes in, it is your job to call them back. So we do two things. We do a report that shows what percentage of incoming leads that come in during that 8 to 5 time frame were addressed immediately being 5 minutes. And then we incentivize our property managers to increase that percentage. Hmm. And we incentivize the leasing agent. So we say, you know, for above 30%, every single lead that you call within the first 5 minutes is $1.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
Now in a year, I might give away $2,000, but I've now turned a lot of shit leads into a lot of gold leads.
Hmm.
Why? Two reasons, Rod. Number one, guess what happens when someone's on apartments.com? He's searching and he sees your property. He clicks this button and he says, okay, I want an appointment. And then he types in his
information. Keep looking.
Right? And that information now stays in the box. So for the next one, he just has to click one button. He doesn't even have to type it in. And then he's just going click, 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 click.
Wow.
And before you know it, he's signed up to 16 of these properties and he really doesn't have a desire to take 16 phone calls. So guess what happens? The first two guys that set an appointment are it, and everybody else, he just never returns their calls. That's the difference between gold and shit leads, right?
Love it.
So now you're pushing people to do that. Guess what will happen? You bumped up your leads. Your appointments have gone up. Now your shows only go up if you text message people the day before and the day of the appointment. That is the only goal there. We push our properties to text message. Please don't bother emailing them. It is a total waste of your time. Text message them the day before. Text message them the day of, and in both of those text message include the actual address of the property so they can tap and use Google to get there and not waste your time calling the leasing office and saying, where the heck are you?
Love it. Love it. That's so simple and so freaking obvious. Love it.
Right. The okay. key is to have systems to audit your property manager on all of these, right? So that's going to get you shows.
How would you do that here? I mean, how would you audit the fact that they actually texted people and held them accountable?
So we give them a texting software, mm. and they have to text using that software. In our case, we use RingCentral and Textedly. So it's like when you're texting people, don't use your smartphone. Use this software. And now with AppFolio, you can actually text from AppFolio. And when you text from AppFolio, it's stored in there, right? So lucky if they're using AppFolio, it's easy for us. If they're using Yardi, then it's harder. Mm-hmm. Then we give them something. Okay. So now we've got L, A, and S taken care of. Now we're getting to our actual apps.
Yeah.
So you got 20 shows and you've only got 3 or 4 apps. Well, dig in. What's causing the problems? Number one, it could be that your property manager is always going to say, oh, these were non-qualified people, right? But you want to dig into that. You want to see if he's telling you the truth or not. If he's telling you the truth, well, you know, you didn't do a good job of buying the property in the right place. So all you can do is go back and increase your lead flow, work harder on the lead flow. But most of the time, what is happening is that they're not selling the property. The leasing agent doesn't think that he's a leasing agent. He thinks he's a showing agent. They don't actually sell the property. So you've got 20 people because Neil did a great job getting all these leases in. And now he's got 20 people in front of him and he only signs 2 apps. That's because he's not showing the property. there are courses, there are marketing courses available, apartment marketing courses. You need to get those people through sales courses,
sales
right?
Courses, yeah.
Send
yeah.
all of these people through the sales courses and then track them again after the sales course. You'll notice a huge increase right after the sales course, but it's going to die down if you don't keep mentioning it to them that they have to keep going back. What I like to do is do the sales course twice. Do it and then do a repetition 3 months later. And that kind of sets it in their mind that this is the only way to do this. And then the last piece is audit their phone logs to make sure that they're following up with those 18 people that didn't sign apps. You had 20 shows, two of them signed apps. What about the remaining 18? They didn't say, I hate your place. They said, I'm not ready. Well, is there a process to call them back when they're ready? Is there a process to capture when they're ready? Because a lot of them say, oh, you know, I'm just looking. I still have 3 months left on my lease. Great. Do you have a process of immediately adding a follow-up callback in our AppFolio to call them a month from now? If you don't, you're just simply saying, I'm going to throw this lead away. That's what you're doing.
A lead that you spend money to get. That you put energy into. So do you have your framework is a callback solution?
It's a callback. So that basically you have to have a callback, and you can also have a text back. We haven't implemented text backs yet, but we're moving in the direction of having text back saying, hey, you came in for a showing. We had a wonderful showing. Now that you're getting close to the end of the lease, let's have you back. We've got better units, nicer units. We've changed this. We've improved that. Now you're bringing them back in, right? The last piece of the process is to get from the applications to the lease. You want, and every area is different. Obviously, you're looking at the demographics. Mm-hmm. If it's an area that is really poor demographics, you want to be careful that that ratio is not too high. If you have 10 applications, if you have 8 leases, you're going to end up with a lot of bad tenants, especially in an area that's low income. So you want the property manager to do his job and call a bunch of those people. Get rid of those.
Do the screening. Do the proper screening. Not just take any person that darkens your doorstep. Okay.
Exactly. And then on the other side, you've got property managers who'll take 10 apps and only approve 2 or 3 because they're elitists. They want to make this a heaven. This isn't heaven. This is a Class C property, right? And not only is that property manager doing bad by you, he's actually also not obeying fair housing laws. So he's going to get
often,
in lots of different ways. So you want to have this narrow band of approval levels that are between 35 and 60%, depending upon your property.
So you like that ratio. Very interesting. And guys, this process has some real subjectivity to it, although with fair housing, it shouldn't, but it does. And I love the fact you've drawn attention to this because you're absolutely right. It can very often be one extreme or the other, and neither are good. In fact, the first example is even worse than the second. If you bring a bunch of people in and you've got that churn and that turnover, then it becomes very expensive. I'd rather have a place sit empty than get the wrong person in it. But you can have the other example as well, where they're just not letting anyone in because they're an elitist. Okay, fascinating.
Yep. By the way, if you hire a Class A manager for a Class C property, always end up with that elitist problem.
Yep.
They just hate all of the people that they're looking at, right?
Because
that's what they're used to. They're used to much better tenants. So never make that mistake.
Right.
Because they may be the most awesome property manager in the world, but they're going to do a horrible job for your property.
Right. And we're talking about the actual company as well. If you're when you're interviewing third party property managers, if their portfolio is primarily A properties, they're gonna excuse the expression, suck with your C property and vice versa. If they specialize in C and D properties, A's are a completely different animal. They can't handle it. So be very, very cognizant of the class of properties that your third party managers are managing.
So we started with 5 numbers, right? LASAL, and those, all of them will have numbers. Your job is to figure out the right numbers that you want to push your property towards. These are goals that you're setting for your property manager. But you know what's really important is the numbers in between. We call them ratios. So you look at my hand and you'll see that there are 4 gaps between the 5 numbers. These are called ratios. The first one is an L to A ratio, right? Lead to appointment. So if you have 100 leads and you think that based on the quality of tenants and you've done your studies, that you should get 40% of those people in for an appointment, then your L to A ratio is 40%.
Got it.
And then from, let's say you have 100 appointments now, or maybe you have 40 appointments, and you believe that out of that, 50% of the people must show if you did, you know, if they did the texting right, then your L to your ratio from A to S, this ratio is 50%. 40% here, 50% here.
Okay, by the way, most of the people are listening, so they're not seeing your fingers here.
Sorry.
So try to explain it in a way that the listeners can hear it. And I mean, I get it, right. but you're effectively, you've got to measure every stage of this and see how effective you are.
Exactly. And what you're trying to do is to figure out what each of those numbers should be. And you learn this by having a bunch of different properties and a bunch of different kinds of properties, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a class A property, your lead to appointment might be 75%. If it's a class D property, it's going to be 20%. You've got to learn that, right? And you can boost it at every level by using technology, by using reminders, by making sure that you get to them in the golden 5 minutes. Actually, there's also a golden 1 minute. Let me tell you about that.
Okay.
If you get to them in the first minute, they're going to stop clicking on apartments.ads, and now you won't be competing with 16 people. You'll be competing with one other guy.
Right.
And at that point, that lead is phenomenally high quality, right? So you if you're tracking all of these five statistics, you're going to do really, really well and set goals for your property managers. Your goals for your property manager are no longer, I want 95% occupancy. Your goals for your property managers are, I want these metrics for these five LASL numbers and the ratios in between them. Now, the last part of this is the word audit. LASL and then audit. Because everything that you just did, the vast majority of people that do this after listening to this think that they have to do it once. That's not even worthwhile to do. So you might as well not do it at all. If you don't have audit, audit is the process of setting weekly or monthly processes. So somebody that's not your property manager goes in and checks to see that they're actually doing all of the things that they said they would.
Consistently.
Consistently, right?
It's going to drop off otherwise.
Exactly. They tend to drop off a lot. And if you keep auditing them and saying, this month we checked your logs and you had 212 appointments scheduled, but you only made text messages to 106. Could we please get that number up to 90%+ of people where you're sending them text messages? You do know that you are going to get a lot more shows. You know that this is great for the property. We got to get that text message, you know, ratio up in the 90s. Right? And when you keep saying that, people are embarrassed that they keep getting caught out and they get better.
Sure. 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 I love it. Love it. Love it. And that's the last piece. Trust but verify. You've got to hold them accountable in every aspect of your business, period. Love it. Brother, you have added so much incredible value today. Wow.
Thank you.
I mean, super, super, totally lived up to what I'd heard about you. And I'm so grateful for you to take your valuable time to be on the show, and we will absolutely put all your contact information in the show notes, and I look forward to hopefully meeting you one day soon. I think, are you speaking at the Houston event that I'm coming to as well? I think
yes, we are co-presenters at the Houston event.
Beautiful, beautiful, fantastic. Well, I will look forward to shaking your hand there, my friend, and it's just been a real treat, and I look forward to seeing you then in very short order.
Thank you, Rod, and keep doing what you're doing. I've been listening to your podcast and learning from you. And I've sent my lead, underwriter to your boot camp. She's going to be going to the next one, which I believe
is in Chicago. No kidding, in Denver. Yeah, I'm in Denver, May 17th, 18th, and 19th. And
she's already all signed up. So.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Make sure she comes up and introduces herself, my friend. Beautiful.
I'll do that.
All right, Neil. We will talk. We'll see you very soon, actually, in Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Rod.
Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to the Lifetime Cash Flow Through Real Estate Investing podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please take a minute to visit iTunes and leave your comments. For more resources or to connect with us further, please visit our website at rodcleef.com. Tune in next week for our next show.